Welcome to the Solera Report. This evening is the first quarter 2021 equity overview and Rambus chartology. This is Catherine Austin Fitz. It's April 1st, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. It's an appropriate time to talk about planet equity. That's what I've been calling it since 2014. As we came out of the financial crisis, I said Mr. Global would mark up the equity rather than mark down the debt. And that's exactly what's happening. We're watching in a balance sheet inflation as the central bankers continue their quantitative easing buying spree. The S&P today just crossed 4,000. Very big line, both psychologically and a technical line. The message to the establishment is that the going direct reset is working, at least for them. So we're looking at a S&P of closed at 4,019, and it was up 1.18% for the day. The Dow at 33, over 33,000. And as Rambus points out in his chartology, industrials and transportation are very, very strong. Throughout the first quarter, we received a tremendous number of questions on savings and investments. And I wanted to use this equity overview to consolidate a body of material into one place that will help you dig in and get answers to your questions for the next couple of months. I want to do this in three parts. The first is to review the financial market charts in the wrap-up web presentation. Every wrap-up comes with a web presentation, and if you link from the commentary for this equity overview, you'll see the link to the web presentation. At the web presentation, we have different parts that'll come up throughout the month of April. So this is a work in progress. The individual wrap-up web presentations are where we build the content. If you look under financial markets, you'll find two things. One is a review, a collection of the charts for the first quarter, the first one being the US dollar index and bonds, the second being commodities, and the third equities. So that's all for the first quarter of 2020. And then we also have the Rambus chartology for the first quarter. And so just click on, go over to the web presentation, click on financial markets, and it might help to follow along on the charts. So the first part's going to be my review of the markets and what Rambus is saying. And one thing I found about me and Rambus, we almost always agree on almost everything. It's quite remarkable. The second part is something I did in Ask Catherine. I gave a review of cross-cutting investment and crypto issues. I had so many questions on investments and so many questions on crypto. As I said, before we dive into each question, I want to give you some cross-cutting comments. And we're republishing that as part because I'd like everybody to hear it, not just the people who are expecting answers to questions. And then part three is a review of asset classes and financial planning issues that I did last year exactly at this time, first quarter 2020 equity overview. And you know something? It's remarkable how... I was going to redo or cover the same ground on my outline today. And I went over the one I did last year and I said, you know, essentially there's almost no change. So let's just put this up. Okay. So part one, review of the financial markets and Rambus. Part two is some cross-cutting comments on investment and crypto issues. And then part three is a review of asset classes and financial planning issues. And all of these are designed to help you grapple with how do you proceed with financial planning in a period of unprecedented change? To complement the audios, I'm going to collect a lot of subscriber links. So there's not only a link to the web presentation, but we're going to put up a fair amount of links that we've put both in the March 4th Ask Catherine, then in the last year for the review of asset classes, and then a number of different things for the part one here. So it's quite a collection of links. Different people have different needs. Some want the article on how to find a good local bank. Some want the article on what percentage of my assets should I hold in precious metals, blah, blah, blah. So I want to make sure that there's a wide selection. So the specific one that you need or resonates with you is there. And again, remember, the web presentation for the first quarter 2021 equity overview is a work in progress. So the part that supports tonight's presentation is done, but the other parts will come up throughout the month. News, trends, and stories will be ready next week. It's part of the way, but it's not, the videos aren't complete yet. But you might find it interesting to take a look. And Joseph and I record news, trends, and stories this Saturday, and then we'll roll out part one the following week, and then part two the week after that. I also added in, I'm a great fan of the American Institute of Economic Research. They have some great financial planning materials and books, and I put some of those links in the subscriber links as well. Also, I'm going to refer to two quarterly newsletters from GMO, asset management firm I have a lot of respect for. And they had two pieces last year in their quarterly newsletter, one on government bonds and one on value stocks, which I think are worth considering. And then there's a link to the Chatwood Index, which is my go-to website to track what the increase in cost of goods sold in the United States is. And then also a link to the U.S. Treasury, where the U.S. Treasury provides yield curve charts that are really a good way to track what's happening with interest rates. So let's start with the charts. I had two charts in the commentary, and I just want to start with them. One showed Bitcoins. There's no doubt crypto and oil were the star speculative markets. Bitcoin was up 50% in the first quarter. So if you look at the prices, it started 2020 at approximately 5,000, which was down from a prior high of about 19,000 to 20,000. So very volatile. It ended the year at approximately 40,000, and now it's up to 60,000. And as I've said, if you listen to the piece that is in part two, as far as I'm concerned, they could take it much, much, much higher before this sort of pump and dump is done, because this is how you lay the groundwork for the smart grid and central bank digital currency. So I think the Bitcoin pump is far from over. And again, I describe it in part two, so I'm not going to address it here. We've seen spectacular swings in the oil and gas market. Remember, it started the year, West Texas crude started the year at 48, and it's now 61. And last year in April, remember that was the one that went down to a negative 37 as the COVID-19 shutdown really swung the oil markets around. You'll see a really good commodities comparison of all the different commodities in the web presentation. So let me turn to the charts, starting with fixed income. As you can see, the dollar is held despite all the pressure on it. It's up about 3% for the quarter. And but the long-term bull in bonds is clearly over. We have serious credit problems. There's way too much fiat money and fiat-denominated assets chasing too few real estates, too few real assets. And partly what we're seeing with the S&P going to 4,000 is inflation through the balance sheet. Interest rates, which had really dropped, they were very low to begin with, but had dropped a lot last year with the COVID-19 sort of shock doctrine. To give you a sense, we started 2020 with 1.53 in the short end, 2.33 on the long end in the Treasury yield curve. So 30-year was out at 2.3%, and in the short was 1.53. It dropped all the way down to essentially 8 basis points, or essentially nothing, at the end of 2020, with the long end dropping down to 1.65, which meant you couldn't get any yield on your bonds. And if you hit a depression, there wasn't enough room to move down very much to get any kind of capital gains on your bonds. So that's, this situation is part of what prompted GMO last year to write government bonds have given us so much they have anything left to give. Well, given the spectacular nature of last year, actually they had another year to give. They at one point, the bonds were up tremendously. But I think given the serious deterioration in credit quality and the sovereign bond levels continue to rise. When Skidmore, came out with his study showing $21 trillion missing from DOD and HUD in his surveys. That $21 trillion was greater than the outstanding debt of the U.S. The U.S. debt is now, 2.5 years later, 3 years later, approaching $30 trillion. So it's, you know, the debt is also going up the S-curve. Let me just roll through the equity charts that are up at the, let me get over to them. Anyway, you can see some pretty interesting things when you just roll through the market. So the S&P ended up closing yesterday. It was up at 15%, so it's up another 1.5% or so since then. And aerospace and defense is back to doing well. Who's not surprised? Underperforming the S&P, though, at 10%. Industrials is strong, as I said, and Rambus talks about that a bit, up 11%. And then financials are very strong. The regional banks were up, 28%. I had another chart that showed them up 25%, and the European financials up 10%. So U.S. banks are flying, and the European banks doing sort of a solid gain, and they're outperforming their stock markets, which doesn't surprise me. Part of that is the interest rates going up a little bit, but the other is the going direct reset is clearly. This is all very good for the bankers. What's interesting is something I didn't expect. Pharmaceuticals are not up that much. Biotech is down slightly, and healthcare only up 3%. And you wonder if the U.S. government hadn't pumped in, and governments around the world hadn't pumped in massive, massive amounts of dollars. Let's see, pharmaceuticals up 7%. So, you know, without the massive subsidy that's been coming in from governments, you wonder what would have happened to that sector. Kind of scary. The not surprising, the home construction up 21% and real estate up 7%. I would, if you haven't looked at our megacities wrap up, I would look at it. I think there's a major move with Planet Equities securitize a significant amount of real estate on the planet. And I think it's a very important, it's one of those big, deep trends that is very important to understand, just not just to look at the equity markets or to manage your savings, but to look at what's going on in the world. The U.S. continues to be the star performer in the equity markets. It's kind of miraculous how that just keeps happening. And Germany was up 5%. The FTSE, the VGK ETF up approximately 5%. And as I said, the European financials doing well, but underperforming the U.S. financials. China is not having as good a year. And India. Actually, India's absolutely been strengthening, and the emerging markets sort of relatively flat. I think if you particularly if you look at Rambus's review of sort of where things are, my expectation is Asia is going to continue to be quite strong. If you look at the growth rates and the underperformance of their markets relative to the G7, at some point it has to come back around. Anyway, so let's turn to the Rambus chartology piece. And I have to tell you, I wax eloquent about Rambus every quarter, but I've never met a technical analyst who I consider as gifted as this guy. He is just an absolute natural, and he's worked hard for decades at this. I mean, this is his gift and this is his passion. And his analysis, you know, it's funny, I almost never disagree with Rambus. We just agree. What he's showing in his analysis And it's very much worth a read. If you don't know a lot about technical analysis, what you need to do is just glean the sort of the gist of what he's saying and not worry about the details. But basically what he's saying is the planet equity bull market is far from over. And I absolutely agree. Now, the one place, and this is interesting, I rarely disagree with Rambis, but this time I do. He says the fundamentals don't support it. And of course, he's looking at Main Street and the devastation that's being done, you know, in the economy, which is very real. But in fact, if you look at the fundamentals of the financial coup and you look at it in a very conceptual, high-level way, it makes absolute sense. The fundamentals do support a planet equity bull because basically you lever up the government with bonds. You suck the money out into the corporations, which is what the stock market is, publicly traded corporations. You suck that money out in the form of contracts or purchases or mandates, other things. And then all the money that's, you know, disappeared with the bailouts or on the missing money. We're up to over $100 trillion. And then you go on a global shopping spree, and nothing makes a global shopping spree more profitable than when you announce a massive sale of all the assets you're trying to buy. So if you shut down the economy with COVID-19 restrictions, then these guys have a field day picking up the market share of their small privately owned competitors. And you know, taking the low-cost capital, you know, provided by QE-ing the central bankers, and off they go. So there used to be these old TV programs back in the day when you would give someone, you'd give a housewife a shopping cart, and she had 5 minutes to fill up her basket. And of course, the person who filled up the basket won, or filled the basket with the most stuff in 5 minutes won, and you know, got to keep it all for free. Anyway, and you'd see these people run around and just start grabbing assets and throwing them into their shopping cart. And frankly, that's what the game looks like between the private equity firms and the, we'll talk in a second about something called SPACs. But I think the fundamentals, if you look at the covert side of the house, absolutely fit with the, you know, a extremely strong equity market for some time to come. Now, as we know, going back over the last 20 years, you can take a 50% down or a 35% down. The technical line for a switch from a bull to a bear is 35% down. And I think we just touched 35% down last year exactly. And then it came back. It was kind of an interesting hit on the line. But I just think, given the uncertainty in the world and the dirty politics and the warfare, you know, the challenge of dealing with real assets, whether it's, you know, equities in companies that have real assets, or it's, you know, everything from oil to gold, and, you know, you're talking about wild swings in prices. And it's one of the things that the GMO article on the government bonds talks about, is how investors, you know, find things that can protect them in a depression or protect them when the markets are down. So one of the examples, you know, it's hard for people who associate the economy being good with the stock market being good, as opposed to, you know, the part of the economy that's publicly traded destroying the part of the economy that's not publicly traded so they can take over their market share and buy their assets cheap. You know, so that's kind of war by stock market. But Costco is a perfect example. So Costco at this point has an incredibly low cost of capital while we're all paying 16 or 17% on average on our credit cards. And their market share is way up because Main Street is shut down. And they've got $400 trillion in fiat assets, bonds and currency around the world looking for a way to get into real things. And of course, Costco has a very real long-term business. And so whether it's their cost of capital, whether it's the market share or money looking for a place to go, you know, a company like Costco is going to be tremendously advantaged in an environment like this. This is what a central bank coup d'etat looks like. One of the issues, I just want to mention a couple of issues in the market. Traditionally, the best investment opportunity was value stocks over the long term. And value stocks have significantly underperformed for a while now. One of the articles I put up from, or the newsletters I put up from GMO, was addressing that issue. They describe value stocks versus growth stocks, but when you drill down and look at the growth stocks, a lot of them, in my opinion, are receiving massive government purchases, contracts, and subsidies because they're part of consolidating the financial coup. So they're riding a tsunami of political money and support, and it's really not growth versus value. It's the deeply and richly subsidized versus value. The question is when and if it will turn around. I'm a lot more enthusiastic about some of the commodity sectors because I think the inflation is showing up there and is going to keep showing up there. Another pattern that I think is very interesting is the sharp move up in industrials and transportation that Rambus noted. And that's an area that I think is worth taking a harder look at what is driving that. Space, in fact, could be part of that. I mentioned on Money and Markets this week with John Titus, SPAC. SPACs is something I'm in the process of learning more about. A SPAC is basically a acquisition company that goes public with a blind pool. It says, you know, we're raising, KKR announced, I think, $1 billion or a $1.2 billion SPAC. Come out and say, we're raising a blind pool to go buy stuff. Just give us money and then we'll figure out what we're going to buy. So it's called a blind pool. And you don't have to put a lot in the prospectus because, you know, there's nothing there to describe, right? More than half of the IPOs last year. In 2020, there were approximately 480 IPOs. More than half of them were SPACs. Now, if you listen to John Titus describe in Going Direct, reset all the money that is moving from the central banks into the, you know, into the real economy, I happen to believe a lot of that money is going into SPACs. And John and I talked about the game of taking space companies public through the SPACs. If you want to take a whole bunch of space companies public and don't want to tell anybody about it or have the analysts drilling in and looking at stuff and taking it through the SEC disclosure process, then, you know, just issue a SPAC, you know, infuse it with the money coming out of, could be coming from a lot of places, including DOD. So you infuse the money, you know, bring it back through the offshore havens, many different ways of doing it. And you pour the money into a SPAC and then you have the SPAC acquire the space company and then you change the name of the SPAC to the space company. You've just gotten your space company entirely publicly traded without going through the SEC disclosure process. Anyway, so I've commissioned somebody to write an article about what's going on in this market, and I find it very intriguing and unbelievably political is my smell of it. That's what my nose says. One of the key issues for anybody who's going to have money in the stock market is, do you want to hedge your portfolio or not? So a hedge is a way of buying puts and covering yourself in case you take a big down. So there are many, many people who don't have the stomach for a 50% or a 35% down in their market value. It's very important when you hit that kind of drop that you not sell at that point. You know, you want to buy at that point, not sell. So one of the advantages of hedging, of course, is that if you get a big drop in the stock market, then your hedges go up. They offset all or partially your drop. And in fact, at that point, you can sell the hedge and buy a lot of stock cheap. So one of the things to do if you are using equity as a potential replacement for bonds, more and more people are doing that, then doing a hedge makes sense. In the long run, if you can just use a buy and hold strategy or a modified buy and hold strategy, hedging is a complete waste of money. But in a world where you have to take a 35 to 50% down, some people just can't tolerate that, and they'd rather reduce their long-term yields by running that hedge. Index funds, ETFs versus mutual funds and individual stocks. There are many different financial arguments for using index funds, including low fees. The problem is you have no idea what you're putting your money into. I call it the giant smush. I just have no interest in putting my money into an index fund. I like to know where my money is, where it goes, what it's doing in a way that I can understand. And many times, as an investment advisor, I would pick up a portfolio and see, 50 different securities, none of which I could understand what they were or what they did. And the amount of sort of disclosure I had to drill down to figure out what in the world these 50 things were. You know, anytime something is that obfuscated, there is definitely fraud going on. So, you know, anything can be made simple and clear, particularly given all the software tools we have now. So, you know, if it takes me forever to figure it out, and, you know, I've seen securities where after an hour, I still can't understand. And if I can't understand it, how can anybody understand it? So I like to pick up a portfolio and see what I own and where it's going and what it's doing. And it has to make sense to me. You know, I'm a person who needs coherence when it comes to where my money is. There's an old joke on Wall Street I love. It's very trite. Everybody knows it. But two traders between London and the U.S. are trading these sardines back and forth. And finally, the guy in New York calls the guy in London and he says, "We just opened, you know, a crate of these sardines and they're rotten." And the guy in London says, "Open them? Why would you open them? Those are trading sardines." So the advantage of putting your money in individual stocks, you avoid the trading sardine problem. I think the question is whether or not you have the time and inclination to manage individual stocks or to find an asset manager that you trust to do so. They're around, and there still, you know, is a small percentage of asset managers who outperform the indices, although they don't correlate with the indices. So, you know, they'll outperform over a 5-year average, but on any given year they can outperform or underperform. So they don't track with the index. You know, they're around and you can find them. Rambus also reviews, in addition to the world stock market, the precious metals, and there's no doubt that they look weak as an investment in the short run. I have no doubt that the crypto pump is drawing big interest and money away from gold and silver. If you don't have your core position in gold and silver, you know, I always believe in buying until you get your core position. Although given the weakness, you might want to average in. Average in is sort of buying over a regular period of time. But I would say it's currently not an attractive investment opportunity. If you see my post, "What percentage of my assets should I hold in precious metals?" I draw a distinction between a core position and an investment position. A core position is the portion you have in gold and silver as a, think of it as central bank insurance. It's money for the worst case. I always say have enough gold to bribe the border guards. You know, that is for the worst case. And then as a investment going forward, you know, gold and silver can be in the short run or intermediate run, a very attractive investment or not. So silver last year particularly was a very attractive investment. But I think when precious metals finish consolidating and find a new bottom, they could get very attractive again, and that could happen easily this year. So you either watch it until it bottoms out, particularly in the lines that Rambus is showing. So if you get a consolidation down to 1400, it's going to be very attractive. I'll revisit it the second quarter. So if you don't have your core position, don't let this keep you from getting into the market. If you do have your core position, but you want to invest, I would just, you know, I would watch the weakness, but not quite bite yet. The big risks on the horizon have nothing to do with, you know, sort of the traditional issues that impact different types of investments and asset categories. The big risks on the horizon are very, very big. And that's why, you know, we're in a totally different environment than we have been for the last 50 years. The first one is war. Saker just put out an article on the situation in the Ukraine and is very concerned that we could be, and I've never heard Saker say this, that we could have a war in the next literally 30 days. The switch to the multipolar world is very rocky, and it's getting rockier every minute, and it's going to get much more rocky. So my concern is real physical war, including nuclear war. Now, we're in the middle of a war. We're a spiritual war, legal war, financial war. And for those, you know, people in nursing homes who are being genocided, it's clearly a physical war. So, you know, the world's at war, and the wars could get much worse. So I think that's the big risk. And we also have an announced intention by the establishment to wipe out your property rights and confiscate your assets and poison you and put into place, whether it's, you know, vaccination passports or central bank digital currencies, control systems that basically destroy your human rights. And if you look at what's being done to poison people's minds or their bodies, you know, I think we have much, much greater risks than whether or not the equity market will go up or down, or precious metals will go up and down in price. Although clearly those are very important. And, you know, I don't care if the world is at war, you still want to buy low and sell high. So, so I appreciate the importance of price. But this is why I far prefer investment in the right jurisdiction, in food, shelter, and energy, so we disintermediate corporations out of our lives and big banks. You know, let's get all these guys out of our balance sheet and out of our financial statement. If you can generate an income and generate savings by staying away from all these people and keeping your money circulating and custodian in places not involving them, and if you can do more for yourself, you know, why pay taxes on more and more money you're working harder and harder to get, when you can simply shrink both your financial statements and your balance sheet and do way more for yourself? If you're in the right jurisdiction and a good jurisdiction, you'll be safer. And if you're set up so that you can rock and roll and move if you have to, you'll be safer. So one of the pieces I did after I wrote Financial Coup d'Etat, which is a very famous blog post that I wrote about the financial coup that's happening, was called Rethinking Diversification. And I talk about how the very old families that have preserved wealth through many generations managed to do so through, you know, war and strife and, you know, all the terrible things that have gone on this planet. And it's a whole different way about thinking about your money. It's like fielding checkers on a or chess players on a chessboard. You know, you're in a game of war, and what you're trying to do is make sure you have more pieces at the end than the other guy. Anyway, so I think resiliency is the place to be. If you can pull off resiliency in more than one jurisdiction, that's great, because you never know. I'll never forget seeing a video about 2 weeks ago of this wonderful German man and his son who are standing in Tanzania being interviewed because they left Germany to go to Tanzania because they wanted to be free. And then the president who was assuring that freedom was, I would say, assassinated. That's not what the Shriekometer said, but that's what I would say. And he was kind of saying, you know, what I've heard many times before, where do I go now? And one of my favorite lines from World War Z with Brad Pitt is, he says, movement is life. So there we go. Anyway, so I far prefer resiliency in the right jurisdiction. Take a look at part two and part three, or listen to part two and part three, because there's a lot of discussion about those and sort of a different way of looking at your investments and your saving in this environment. The most important thing you have is the value of your time. And one of the things I will say, when it comes to managing your resources, there's nothing more important than process. What a lot of great investment people will tell you is you got to work on the process. Set a time, an hour, once a week, hopefully with other people in your family, to, you know, to just chip away. So the first thing you do is you find a good local bank or credit union, get that done. Okay, now you've got a good, trustworthy transaction platform. Okay, you know, start working on all the different issues that go into having a financial plan and managing your assets. It's all a learning journey, and it's all a process, but it starts with your time. and the pressure on our time is just, if you think inflation's a problem, wait till you see the inflation that technocracy, the demands that technocracy put on your time, it's going to continue to rise. So that's one of the reasons I always encourage everyone, please do a time budget. Look very hard at your time. Anyway, so take a look at part one, part two, and part three, and troll through the links and check out the web presentation. There's a lot of great materials here, and keep feeding back with more questions, and we'll see if we can't get you to the point where you are master of your own financial and economic situation. That's my dream for every one of us. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me on the Equity Overview First Quarter 2021 Wrap-Up. I look forward to talking with you next week with Joseph Farrell for News Trends and Stories Part 1. Have a good evening.